From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the conclusion of Fumed.
They want money. They think that whatever they do is money into the company. It's good for them and screw the community.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp carrier dedicated to handling claims proactively and a commitment to helping injured employees and workers' comp policyholders get back to business. TexasMutual.com/claims.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas Public Radio has partnered with the nonprofit newsroom Public Health Watch to amplify their investigative reporting on environmental issues and resulting health impacts in Channelview, an unincorporated community in Harris County. This week, the conclusion of the series on Texas Matters, but there's more. For the rest of the story and additional reporting, go to fumedpodcast.com. Now here's Fumed from Public Health Watch.
There's a special kind of fear that fills your body during a natural disaster. It paralyzes you, reminds you just how small and helpless you are when the power's out and nobody's coming to save you. Greg Moss was filled with that fear on the morning of August 28th, 2017. Hurricane Harvey had made landfall on the Texas coast. Now, the Category 4 storm was stalled over Houston.
For a third brutal day, torrential rain, people rescued from flooded homes, volunteers with boats pitching in, the river still rising.
More than 50 inches of rain had already fallen in parts of Harris County. Roads had become rivers. Entire neighborhoods were underwater. Hundreds of thousands of people were without power. Things were especially perilous for the 45,000 residents of Channelview, which borders the San Jacinto River. That 20-mile stretch of water is sandwiched between the Gulf of Mexico, where hurricanes often gather force, and Lake Houston, a man-made reservoir that's protected by an enormous dam. During heavy storms, the dam's gates are opened to keep nearby businesses and upscale neighborhoods from flooding. When that happens, walls of water hurl downstream toward Channelview.
We are just east of Houston in Channelview. Homes were just ripped off their foundations and moved several yards. Cars, boats, and trucks were thrown around like they were bathtub toys.
Flooded oil refineries and chemical plants released as much as 5 million pounds of pollutants into the air during the storm.
Greg Moss's low-lying neighborhood, the River Bottom, was ground zero in Channelview. From his deck, he watched floodwaters 10 feet high sweep through his property. His workshop and everything inside it was in ruins. His race boat was destroyed. So was his car and his truck. Greg didn't have flood insurance back then. He'd never imagined a storm so extreme that water would penetrate his manufactured house. It stood on a hill and 5-foot stilts. But this storm was different.
It just kept coming up and up and up and up. When it got up on that middle deck, it's not going to stop.
Greg leashed up his black lab, Lucky, and started hoping for a miracle. An hour later, a team of firefighters pulled up in a rubber motorboat. A video they took shows Greg, soaked white hair pressed against his forehead, with Lucky close beside him. His deck looks like a pier on a lake. His manufactured home looks like a houseboat.
I took a drone and my camera and a pistol with me and some clothes, and I was gone, you know?
As the boat pulled away, Greg watched familiar landmarks, including the beloved Riverside Inn restaurant, disappear beneath a sea of brown water. He couldn't help but wonder what kind of chemical cocktail might be brewing in that murky abyss. I'm David Leffler. From Public Health Watch, this is Fumed, an investigative podcast about the people who live in the shadows of America's chemical plants and oil refineries. This season, A group of stubborn Texans try to salvage what's left of their working-class community. That's a problem, though, because they live in East Harris County, where the petrochemical industry calls the shots. By the time Hurricane Harvey arrived, two of those stubborn people, Greg Moss and Carolyn Stone, had been fighting back for years, each in their own way. In this episode, they finally cross paths, paving the way for an alliance that just might save their beleaguered community. Part 5, Battle Cry. Carolyn rode out Hurricane Harvey in South Channelview, down the river from Greg. She and her husband, Bobby, knew how to prepare for storms. They froze gallons of water and tea and baked chocolate chip cookies. Then they set up their camping stove and some lanterns in the living room so they'd be ready when the power went out.
It was whipping and whistling and, you know, just, it was loud, howling outside. The house is creaking because our house is wooden up on blocks. I was expecting the house to be carried away.
But Carolyn had more to fear than wind gusts or floodwaters. The once placid stretch of river across the street was now lined with at least 60 enormous barges. Some of them were stacked side by side, like Tetris pieces. Many were filled with volatile chemicals. If a fire ignited, the barges could become floating bombs.
We had watched the tugboats and barges, the lights and stuff, you know, as the water rose, they rose. It was a lot of movement and crashing and crunching.
It was the not knowing that scared Carolyn most. If the state or county had a plan for what to do during chemical emergencies, nobody had shared it with her. Residents were on their own. When the skies finally cleared, Carolyn's entire block was in shambles. But at least the barges docked across the street seemed intact. That's where Harley Marine had built its headquarters, despite Carolyn's desperate attempts to block the construction. It wasn't until later that Carolyn learned just how close to catastrophe she had been.
We found out that barges had been breaking loose from upriver and coming down, as they described it, in platoons of 13 or more. I know there was a storm raging on, but at no point before, after, during, did anyone come over and say, hey, we have this issue going on. It might be safer if y'all left.
That disturbing revelation, shared in Harley's email newsletter, sticks with Carolyn to this day. She dodged a bullet that time, but she lived in Channelview, where big storms and floods are as common as high school football games on Friday night. Hurricane Harvey showed Greg something too. It proved that his fears about the two toxic waste dumps near his home, the San Jacinto River Waste Pit's Superfund site, were justified. One pit is just south of the Interstate 10 bridge. The other is just north of the bridge, close to Greg's house.
Harmful and dangerous chemicals may have washed down rivers from a Houston area Superfund site during flooding from Hurricane Harvey. The EPA says an unknown amount of chemicals linked to birth defects and cancer may be in the water.
The flooding had damaged the temporary protective cap on the northern waste pit. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency later found that cancer-causing dioxin had poured into the San Jacinto at levels 2,000 times higher than the threshold that requires an emergency cleanup. The storm devastated Greg financially. It would cost about $50,000 to replace his car, truck, boat, and tools. Money he simply didn't have. But the implications of Hurricane Harvey's destruction worried him even more. What if a runaway barge spilled hazardous chemicals into the river? And what if those chemicals were mixed with the dioxin-laced sludge in the waste pits? Houston meteorologist Matt Lanza worries about that too. He's the managing editor for the website Space City Weather. He also moonlights as a disaster preparedness consultant for petrochemical companies along the Houston Ship Channel. It sits just below Channelview and is the heart of one of the world's busiest seaports. Lanza told me that if a hurricane made a direct hit on the Ship Channel, the U.S. economy could plummet.
All these outcomes are bad. They're bad outcomes for not just Houston, but for the country. You can't view those as a weather problem. That is a national security problem in every sense of the word.
The human cost of such a catastrophe could be even greater. The thousands of chemical plants, refineries, and barges along the channel could create a giant toxic stew.
My concern is not so much like the Fukushima type thing where it's just completely completely unlivable, uninhabitable over a wide area, but it will be for a time. It's like taking Superfund sites and multiplying them and adding a whole bunch more to the list, right?
How you doing?
All right. How are you?
By this time, late 2017, Greg had been fighting for more than 5 years to get the northern waste pit cleaned up without much success. It was covered with a temporary cap in 2011, but not much had been done since then. Still, Greg felt hopeful. He was working with Jackie Young, the woman from nearby Highlands whose nonprofit kept goading regulators to act. She'd gotten married since they met and was now Jackie Metcalf.
Thank you all for joining us tonight. I want to go ahead and get started.
Her meetings were drawing big crowds. Personal injury lawyers, residents from neighboring communities, even the EPA was paying attention. Greg was Jackie's eyes in the sky. He'd spent more than $1,000 replacing his old drones with machines that could fly further and were fitted with high-resolution cameras.
See the barges? That's the riverside, and that's the barges. Zooms in.
Jackie used Greg's pictures at her meetings. She also used them to make sure the companies responsible for cleaning up the waste pits were doing what they were supposed to do.
One time she's saying, oh, they're down there digging all this stuff up and doing all this testing. I says, no, that's that excavator's outside the thing digging. And she says, can you prove it? Why, yeah, I can. Here's a picture, you know.
Carolyn's fight was still a very private one at this point. She was still fighting Harley Marine, which had built its headquarters across the street from her house, along with a wharf big enough to serve a half dozen tugboats and a collection of chemical barges. It didn't make sense. Her deed literally said, no noxious or offensive industry, business, or activity shall be carried upon any lot. But finding a lawyer willing to take on Texas's most powerful industry in its own backyard wasn't easy. By the spring of 2018, she had contacted almost 50 lawyers. Most turned her down right away. Some sent her to other lawyers. A few set up appointments to visit with her and Bobby. But none of them showed up.
No one of them. And there was really no explanation. It's just a short, quick conversation, not even a conversation, just saying, we've decided not to handle this.
Why didn't Carolyn just give up? I've asked her that question a few times. Sometimes she'd talk about the principle of the thing. Right is right. In her eyes, what Harley Marine did and what the government allowed was wrong. But a more painful reality drove her to. Like so many Channelview residents, she and Bobby had no escape, no nest egg to pick up and start new someplace else. If their house had been on the water, rather than across the street from the water, they could have sold out to a barge company and moved on, as others had done. But the barge companies didn't need their land. and the very presence of the barges had made their home almost unsellable. They'd paid $43,000 for it in 1988. In 2018, it was worth just $30,000.
When you're fighting to save your quality of life, your health, your sanctuary, what do? You have to keep going. I mean, you don't have a choice. I wasn't sleeping because if I wasn't on the phone talking to somebody, I was on the computer trying to find laws or another lawyer.
Carolyn isn't a very religious woman, but she sees the chain of events that began in June of 2018 as a sign from the heavens. One day, a copy of the local newspaper showed up in her driveway, even though she hadn't subscribed to the paper in years. Inside was a flyer saying that a group she'd never heard of, the Texas Health and Environment Alliance, was having a meeting that night about the waste pits. It was being held in Highlands, a town just a few miles northeast of Channelview, in less than 2 hours. She rushed inside and told Bobby to get ready. The parking lot was packed when they arrived. Inside, people were standing because they'd run out of seats. Carolyn watched a young woman with long blonde hair walk to the front of the room. Everyone got quiet.
Here was this young little girl, and I had no idea how old she was, but she looked like 17, you know, leading this room full of people. And she had the EPA. She had, I think the Army Corps was there. It seems like everybody or a great number of people who have been a great help were at that meeting that night.
For Carolyn, seeing Jackie Medcalf was living proof that advocacy could work, even in East Harris County.
I was like, it can be done. It wasn't like our long history of just being blown off.
Carolyn was nervous when she approached Jackie after the meeting. Shy, even. She'd spent hundreds of hours poring over environmental reports and documenting pollution incidents. But she'd done those things in private. Talking about her work with someone as impressive as Jackie felt intimidating. Jackie Medcalf was 31 at the time. She had a presence, an unwavering belief in what she was doing. She came by it honestly. When she was 12, her parents bought their dream house in Highlands, near the San Jacinto River.
When we moved there, we, you know, got chickens, started a garden. It was a hay farm. We had horses, and we had a water well that was described to us when we purchased the home as a pristine well. And we thought, you know, hey, we've got this well. We're great.
But soon after they moved, Jackie and her parents developed health problems. Her dad was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, a blood cancer that's been linked to benzene exposure. Jackie and her mom often woke up in the middle of the night and ran to the bathroom, vomiting. Their cats and dogs were throwing up too. Their chickens lost their feathers. Jackie developed such debilitating knee pain that she had to turn down an offer to run track in college. Then, her knees gave out entirely. She needed a walker, sometimes even a wheelchair, and started having seizures. At one point, her mom had to carry her to and from her bed and accompany her to class. The doctors couldn't figure out what was happening.
I was 90 pounds. I was losing my hair. I mean, not just the meat off my bones, the hair off my head. I had bleeding sores all over my body.
Despite her declining health, Jackie was set on graduating college. And that persistence probably saved her life. In an environmental geology class, she learned that the tap water in some parts of Houston was contaminated with radium. So she tested the water from her family's well. Nearly 24 heavy metals showed up in their water, and doctors found 19 of those heavy metals in Jackie's body. Some of them, zinc, copper, chromium, mercury, and arsenic were in the Superfund site's northern pit, according to an EPA report released a few years later. The World Health Organization says long-term exposure to those metals can cause anemia, skin lesions, damage to the nervous system and gut, and even cancer. The pit, it turned out, was just a few miles from Jackie's backyard and the well that provided her family's drinking water. Carolyn met someone else at Jackie's meeting. As she and Bobby were getting ready to leave, Bobby introduced her to a bushy-haired man who'd spoken up several times that night, Greg Moss. Turns out, he'd worked with Bobby at an oil company back in the 80s. Greg seemed really wound up about the waste pits and the barges nearby. Obsessed, even.
They want money. They think that whatever they do is money into the company. It's good for them and screw the community. It was a nice area and all that. And now what have we got to look at? Barges. And we have no say-so in that at all.
As Greg ranted, Carolyn saw herself in him. His fears sounded like her fears. His anger sounded like her anger. Greg saw something in Carolyn too, something she hadn't yet seen in herself, that she could be the leader their community was missing. Carolyn's world was expanding, but something kept gnawing at her.
I'm going to Highlands to hear about the waste pits that's here in Channelview. And I said, why are we going to a different community to hear about our waste pits? Why aren't we having the meetings?
About a month later, in August of 2018, Carolyn got another sign from above. This one came in the form of a phone call from one of the lawyers she'd reached out to. He knew someone who might take her case. Call Lone Star Legal Aid and ask for Amy Dinn, he said. She's the one you need. Lone Star Legal Aid is a Houston-based nonprofit that represents people who can't afford a lawyer. It had just created a new environmental justice team, and Amy was a key part of it. A pit bull lawyer with a reputation for tenacity and fearlessness. Amy made an appointment to visit their home, but Carolyn and Bobby had been burned so many times that they didn't dare get their hopes up. The August heat was blistering that morning. Carolyn paced in her yard, inspecting her flowers, checking on the turtles Bobby kept in a shady corner, doing anything she could to keep from watching the clock.
When she actually walked through the door, I'm not a crier, but I was on the verge of tears. Even now, I get kind of choked up talking about it because it was such, to me, such a moment. You know, it was, you're drowning and you finally get the life ring around you and it's being pulled in. You're not just sitting there flouncing trying to catch it. You're actually being, you know, towed in.
Amy was tall, with short, brownish-gray hair and round glasses. She told me that Carolyn had basically built the case herself.
Carolyn stopped them from the replat. She had it stopped, and she had their permits all tied up. Like, she almost won this fight without ever needing a lawyer.
I've never seen anything like it. It made me want to take the case because I want to help somebody that's trying to help themselves.
What angered Amy most was how Carolyn was treated by the government agencies that were supposed to protect her.
It wasn't just that the party across the street was a bad actor. The city and the county were complicit in it, and they knew what was going on, and they let it happen.
I asked Houston's planning department and Harris County's engineering department about their roles in the construction of Harley Marine's regional headquarters on Lakeside Drive. The city's planning department declined to comment, the county's engineering department sent a statement saying, "The amended plat was approved because it met the requirements set forth by the Planning Commission and the Commissioner's Court." But the county didn't respond to questions about why Carolyn's deed restrictions had been ignored. Lone Star Legal Aid filed a lawsuit on Carolyn's behalf 5 months later, in January of 2019. The lawsuit's targets were Houston's planning department, which allowed Harley Marine to combine its plots through an amended plat, Harris County's engineering department, which issued the permits for Harley Marine to build its headquarters on Lakeside Drive, and Harley Marine itself. Hey there, this is David Leffler from Public Health Watch. I hope you've enjoyed listening to Fumed over these past 5 weeks as much as we've enjoyed sharing it with you. This is the last episode that'll be airing on Texas Matters, but Carolyn and Greg's fight for Channelview isn't over, not by a long shot. Their battle with the barge companies, the personal risks they're willing to take, and the repercussions of their actions are about to escalate to the point where Greg becomes the victim of a shocking crime.
I asked him, I said, "Go over there and check on my house." He walked over here and the fire was shooting out the windows and everything, the smoke and everything. And he said, "Yeah, your house is on fire. They did this to me, and payback's a somebody's gonna mess with me, they're gonna bleed to death."
If it's an explosion, I don't expect my house to be there. My property, I expect it to be gone. I hope I'm not home. If I am home, it's like, all you who know about all this, please fight for us. Please bring it to attention. This was known. These people fought against it. These people brought it to the attention. And they were ignored, basically said, "You're not worthy of a safe environment."
To hear the rest of Fumed, go to fumedpodcast.com or listen on the NPR app. Thanks again. Fumed is a production of Public Health Watch. It was written and reported by me, David Leffler. Additional reporting by Savannah Strott and Selena Arredondo. Susan White was my editor. Our executive producer was Jordan Goss-Poré. Our senior producer was Selena Arredondo. Savannah Strott was an assistant producer. Yana Cholakovska and Jordan Goss-Poré provided additional research. Our music was composed and performed by Michael Ramos. Additional music by Epidemic Sound. Mark Bush was our sound engineer. Fact-checking by Enna Alvarado. Artwork by Matthew Fleming. Special thanks to our distribution partners at Texas Public Radio and to the Texas Tribune for studio and technical support. Also, thanks to Joanne Farian, Lynn Perry, and Chris Worthington for their advice and encouragement. Jim Morris is the executive director and editor-in-chief of Public Health Watch. To see pictures of Carolyn and Greg and learn more about Channelview, go to fumedpodcast.com.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes online at tpr.org. You can also find us wherever you download cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.